I know a vet who can give you a drug to put her to sleep for the whole air trip. You can have her go in a padded box as diplomatic luggage." The mistress nodded her head. "Yes, Antoinette, I will have that address, please," she answered. I had to remain in the salon while people exclaimed at my figure, expressed amazement at the length of my legs and the blackness of my tail. "I thought all the best type of Siamese cat had a kinky tail," said one. "Oh, no," asserted the mistress. "Siamese cats with kinked tails are not now the fashion. The straighter the tail, the better the cat. Shortly we shall send this one to be mated, then we shall have kittens for disposal." At long last Madame Albertine left the salon. "Phew. Give me four-legged cats any time rather than that two-legged variety." Around, I had never seen two-legged cats before and did not really understand how they would manage. There was nothing behind me except the closed door, so I just shook my head in bewilderment and walked on beside Madame Albertine. Darkness was falling and a light rain was pattering on the windows when the telephone in Madame Albertine's room jangled irritably. She rose to answer it and the mistress's shrill voice disturbed the peace. "Have you the cat in your room?" "Is not yet well," replied Madame Albertine. Mistress's voice rose an octave. "I have told you, Albertine, I will not have her in the house unless visitors are here. Take her to the outhouse at once. I wonder at my goodness in keeping you. You are so useless." Reluctantly Madame Albertine drew on a heavy woolen knitted coat, struggled into the raincoat, and wrapped a scarf around her head. Lifting me, she wrapped a shawl around me and carried me down the back stairs, stopping at the servants' hall to pick up a flashlight. She walked to the door. A blustering wind blew into our faces. Scudding clouds raced low across the night sky. From a tall poplar tree an owl hooted dismally as our presence scared off the mouse which he had been hunting. Rain-laden branches brushed against us and shed their load of water over us. The path was slippery and treacherous in the dark. She cautiously shuffled along, picking her steps by the feeble light of the flashlight, muttering imprecations against me and all she stood for. The outhouse loomed before us, a darker patch in the darkness of the shading trees. In the door and entered. There was a frightening crash as a plant pot, caught by her voluminous clothes, swept to the floor. In spite of myself, my tail fluffed with fright and a sharp ridge formed along the length of my spine. Flashing her light in a semicircle before her, Madame Albertine edged further into the shed toward the pile of old newspapers which was my bed. "I'd like to see that woman shut in a place like this," she muttered to herself. "It would knock some of the fanciers out of her." Gently she put me down, saw that there was water for me. I never drank milk now, only water, and put a few scraps of frog's legs beside me. In my head, she slowly backed out and shut the door behind her. The fading sound of her footsteps was drowned by the keening of the wind and the pattering of the rain upon the galvanized iron roof. Did this shed? Often people forgot all about me, and I could not get out until the door was opened. All too frequently I stayed there without food or water for 2 or even 3 days. Shouts were of no avail, for it was too far from the house, hidden in a grove of trees far at the back of all other buildings. I would just lie and starve, becoming more and more parched, waiting for someone in the house to remember that I had not been seen about for a time, then come and investigate. Now it is so different. Here I am treated as a human. In place of near starvation I always have food and drink, and I sleep in a bedroom on a real bed of my own. Looking back through the years it seems as if the past was a journey through a long night and I have now emerged into the sunlight and warmth of love. The past I had to beware of heavy feet. Now everyone looks out for me. Furniture is never shifted unless I am made aware of its new location, because I am blind and old and can no longer fend for myself. As the lama says, I am a dearly loved old granny who is enjoying peace and happiness. As I dictate this I sit in a comfortable chair where the warm rays of the sun fall upon me, but all things in their place. The days of shadows were still upon me and the sunlight had yet to break through the storm rack. Strange stirrings took place within me. Softly, for I was as yet unsure of myself, I sang a song. I padded round the grounds seeking something. My longings were vague, yet urgent. Sitting beside an open window, not daring to enter, I heard me. "She is calling. We'll send her immediately and have her collected tomorrow. I want to sell the kittens as soon as possible." Shortly after, Gaston came to me and put me in a stuffy wooden box with the lid fastened securely. The smell of the box, apart from the stuffiness, was most interesting. Groceries had been carried in it. Frogs' legs and snails, raw meats and things that were green, stood that I hardly noticed when Gaston lifted the box and carried me off to the garage. The box was left resting on the concrete floor. Of oil and petrol made me feel sick. At last Gaston entered the garage again, opened the big front doors, and started up our second car, an old Citroen. Tossing my box rather roughly into the luggage space, he entered the front and drove off. It was a terrible ride. We took corners so fast that my box slid violently and stopped with a bump. At the next corner the process would be repeated. The darkness was intense, and the fumes from the engine exhaust made me choke and cough. The journey would never end. Violently the car swerved. There was the horrid squeal of skidding rubber, and as the car straightened and shot ahead once more my box rolled over, upside down. A sharp splinter and my nose began to bleed. The Citroen juddered to a stop and soon I heard voices. The luggage compartment was opened and for a moment there was silence. Then, "Look, there is blood," a strange voice said. My box was lifted. I felt swaying as someone carried it along. Steps were climbed and shadow fell across the cracks of the box and I guessed that I was inside a house or shed. A door shut, I was lifted higher and put on a table. Fumbling hands scraped against the outer surface, then the lid was thrown open. I blinked in the southern light. "Poor little cat," said a woman's voice. Reaching in she put her hands beneath me and lifted me out. Felt ill, sick and dizzy with the exhaust fumes, half stunned from the violent journey, and bleeding from the nose quite heavily. Don stood by looking white and frightened. "Telephone me, Edaman." "Don't lose me my job," said Gaston. "I drove very carefully." The man lifted the telephone while the woman mopped the blood from my nose. "Your little cat is ill, she is underfed and she has been dreadfully shaken by this journey." "Lose your cat, madame, unless greater care is taken of her." "Good gracious me," I heard me's voice reply. "Such a trouble for a mere cat." "Is looked after. I do not pamper her and spoil her. I want her to have kittens." "But madam," the man replied, "you will have no cat and no kittens if she is treated like this." "You have a very valuable pedigree Siamese cat here, of the best strain in the whole of France." "I know, I bred her mother." "To neglect this cat is bad business, like using diamond rings to cut glass." "No, you," answered me, "chauffeur there, I want to speak to him." Silently the man passed the telephone to Gaston. In the torrent of words from the mistress was so great, so vitriolic, that it defeated its own end and merely bemused the senses. At last, after much haggling, terms were agreed upon. I was to stay at, where was I, until I was better, and departed, still shivering as he thought of me. On the table as the man and woman worked upon me, the sensation of just a little prick, and almost before I realized it I was asleep. It was a most peculiar sensation. I dreamed that I was in heaven and a lot of cats were talking to me, asking where I came from, what I was doing, and who my parents were. They were speaking in best Siamese cat French, too. Wearily I raised my head and opened my eyes. Surprise at my surroundings caused my tail to fluff and a ridge to form along the length of my spine. Inches from my face was a wire mesh door. It was lying on clean straw. Beyond the wire meshed door was a large room containing all kinds of cats and a few small dogs. My neighbors on each side were Siamese cats. "The wreckage is stirring," said one. "My, your tail did droop when you were carried in," said the other. "Where did you come from?" yelled a Persian from the opposite side of the room. "These cats make me sick," growled a toy poodle from a box on the floor. "Yeah," muttered a small dog just out of my line of sight. "Dis dames would get slapped down real good status side." "Hark at that Yank dog shoot in the breeze," said someone nearby. "He hasn't been here long enough to have a right to talk. A boarder, that's what he is." "Awa," said the cat on my right, "I've been spayed." "Me, I'm Song too," said the cat on my left. "I fought with a dog. Gee, you should see that dog, I really worked him over." "I'm Fifi," I responded timidly. I didn't know there were any more Siamese cats than my late mother and me. Quiet in the big room, then complete uproar broke out as a man entered bearing food. Everyone talked at once, dogs demanding to be fed first, cats calling the dogs selfish pigs, the clatter of feeding dishes and the gurgle of water as drinking containers were filled, then the slurp slurp as the dogs started eating. The man came over and looked at me. The woman entered and came across. "She is awake," said the man. "Nice little cat," said the woman. "To build her up, she will not have kittens in her present state." They brought me a plentiful supply of food, and moved on to others. I was not feeling so good, but thought it would be bad manners not to eat, so I set to and soon cleared up the whole lot, said the man, coming back. "She was starving. Let us put her in the annex," said the woman. "She will get more sunlight there. I think all these other animals bother her." Opened my box and cradled me in his arms as he carried me across the room and through a door which I had not been able to see before. "Goodbye," yelled Chawa. "Nice meeting you," screamed Song too. "Remember me to the Toms when you meet them." We passed through the doorway and entered a sunlit room where there was one large cage in the center. "Going to put her in the monkey cage?" boss asked a man whom I had not seen before, replied the man who was carrying me. "She needs looking after because she would not carry in her present state." "Carry? What was I supposed to carry? Did they think I was going to work here at carrying dishes or something?" The man opened the door of the big cage and put me in. It was nice, except for the smell of disinfectant. There were tree branches and shelves and a pleasant, straw-lined box in which I could sleep. I wandered around cautiously, for mother had taught me to most thoroughly investigate any strange place before settling down, which was inviting, so I did my claws to show that I had settled in. By walking up the branch I found that I could look over a small hedge and see beyond. There was a very large enclosed space, with netting all the way around it and all the way across the top. Small trees and bushes studded the ground as I watched. A most magnificent Siamese Tom strolled into view. He was a gorgeous figure, long and slim, with heavy shoulders and the blackest of black tails. As he walked slowly across the ground he was singing the latest love song. I listened entranced, but for the moment was too shy to sing back to him. My heart fluttered, and I had the strangest feelings. A deep sigh escaped me as he wandered out of sight. Sat bemused on the topmost reach of that branch, my tail twitched spasmodically, and my legs trembled so much with emotion that they would scarce support me. A Tom, what a superb figure. I could well imagine him gracing a temple in far-off Siam, with yellow-robed priests greeting him as he lazed in the sun. And, was I mistaken? I felt that he had glanced in my direction, knew all about me. My head was awhirl with thoughts of the future. Slowly, shakily, I descended the branch, entered the sleeping box, and lay down to think things over. The next day the man said I had a fever through the bad car journey and the exhaust fumes. I knew why I had the fever. His handsome black face and long sweeping tail had haunted my sleeping hours, and said I was in poor condition and must rest. 4 days I lived in that cage, resting and eating. The next morning I was led to a little house inside the netting enclosure. Settling down, I looked about me and saw that there was a netting wall between my compartment and that of the handsome Tom. His room was neat, and well kept. His store was clean, and I saw that his bowl of water had no dust floating on the surface. In then, I guessed that he was in the enclosed garden seeing about the plants. Sleepily I closed my eyes and dozed off. A hearty voice jerked me awake and I glanced timidly towards the netting wall. Said the Siamese Tom, "Glad to meet you, I'm sure." His big black face pressed close to the netting, his vivid blue eyes flashing his thoughts towards me. "Are being married this afternoon," he said. "I'll like that, will you?" Blushing all over, I hid my face in the straw. "Don't worry so," he exclaimed. "We are doing noble work. There are not enough of us in France. You'll like it, you'll see." He laughed as he settled down to rest after his morning walk. Lunchtime the man came in and laughed as he found us, sitting close with only the netting between us, singing a duet. Tom rose to his feet and roared to the man, "Get this door out of the way." Some words which made me blush all over again. The man leisurely unlatched the door, hooked it back safely, and turned and left us. That Tom, the ardor of his embraces, the things he said to me. Afterwards we lay side by side in a warm glow, and I had the chilling thought, I was not the first. Rose to my feet and strolled back to my own room. Once again shut the screen door between us and carried me back to the big cage. I slept soundly. The woman came and carried me off to the room at which I first entered the building. She put me on a table and held me securely while the man carefully examined me all over. I shall have to see this cat's owner because the little thing has been badly treated. To my left ribs and pressing where it was still tender, something dreadful has happened to her and she is too valuable an animal to be neglected. Shall we take a ride in that direction tomorrow and have a word with the owner? The woman seemed to be really interested in me, and answered, saying, yes, we will take her back. We might be able to collect our fees at the same time. Phone her and say that we will deliver the cat and collect the money. He picked up the phone and eventually spoke to me. Her sole concern appeared to be that the cat delivery might cost her a few francs more. Assured that it would not, she agreed to pay the bill as soon as I was returned. So it was decided, I should stay until the following afternoon and then should be returned to me. Diplomat. Here, Georges, called the man, take her back to the monkey cage, she is staying until tomorrow. Old bent man whom I had not seen before, shambled over to me and lifted me with surprising care. Placing me on his shoulder he walked away, into the big room he carried me, not stopping so that I could have a word with the others. The other room, where he entered the monkey cage and shut the door behind us. For a few short moments he trailed a piece of string in front of me. Little thing, he muttered to himself, it is clear that no one has ever played with you in your short life. Alone once more, I walked up the sloping branch and looked out across the wide enclosure. No emotion stirred within me now. I knew that the Tom had plenty of queens, and I was just one of a long line. People who know cats always call the males Toms and the females queens. It has nothing to do with pedigree, but is just a generic term. A solitary branch was swaying, bending beneath a considerable weight. I watched the big Tom sprang from the tree and plummeted to earth. Rushing up the trunk he did the same thing again, and again. I watched in fascination, then it dawned upon me that he was taking his morning exercise. Idly, for want of something better to do, I lay upon my branch and sharpened my claws until they shone like the pearls around me. Snack. Then, bored, I slept in the comforting warmth of the noonday sun. Some time later, when the sun was no longer directly overhead but had moved to warm some other part of France, I was awakened by a soft, motherly voice. Some difficulty at a window almost out of my reach, I saw an old black queen, one who had seen many, many summers. She was decidedly plump, and as she sat there on the window ledge, washing her ears, I thought how nice it would be to have a chat. She, so you are awake. I hope you are enjoying your stay here. We pride ourselves that we give better service than anywhere else in France. Are you eating well? Thank you, I replied. I am being looked after very well. Are you, madam? The proprietress answered, although many people think I am. The responsible task of teaching new stud toms their duties, I give them a tryout before they are put in general circulation. Very important, very exacting work. But for a few moments, absorbed in our own thoughts, what is your name? I asked. Butterball, she replied. I used to be very plump, and my coat used to shine like butter, but that was when I was much younger, she added. I do a variety of tasks, besides that which I told you, you know. I also police the food stores to see that the mice do not disturb us. She relaxed into contemplation of her duties, and then said, have you tried our raw horse meat yet? Oh, you simply must try it before you leave. Truly delicious, the best horse meat you can buy anywhere. I believe that we may be having some for supper. I saw Georges, that's the helper, you know, cutting it up just a few moments ago. He paused, then said in a satisfied voice, yes, I'm sure there is horse meat for supper. Sat and thought, and washed a little, then Madame Butterball said, well, I must go. I will see that you get a good helping. I believe I can smell Georges bringing supper now. She jumped from the window. In the big room behind me I could hear shouts and yells. Horse meat, feed me first. I'm starving. Quick, Georges. But Georges took no notice. Instead he came through the big room and straight into me, serving me first. First, little cat, he said. Are the quietest of the lot, So you get served first. And at him to show that I fully appreciated the honor. A great quantity of meat. It had a wonderful scent, against his legs and purred my loudest. A little cat, he said, I will cut it up for you. He very civilly cut the whole lot into pieces then, with a have a good meal. Cat went off to attend to the others. It was just wonderful, sweet to the taste, and tender to the tooth. Back and washed my face. A scrabbling sound made me look up just as a black face with twinkling eyes appeared at the window. Good, wasn't it? A bull, what did I tell you? Serve the best horse meat obtainable here. You ate, though, fish for breakfast. Lovely stuff, I have just tasted it myself. Oh well, have a good night. That she turned and was gone. Fish? Think of food now. I was full. A change from the food at home. There I was given scraps which humans had left, messed up stuff with silly sauces which often burned my tongue. Here rats lived in real French style. The light was fading as the sun set in the western sky. Birds came flapping home, old ravens calling to their fellows, discussing the events of the day. Soon the dusk deepened, and bats came fluttering by, their leathery wings creaking as they wheeled and turned in pursuit of night insects. Over the tall poplar trees the orange moon peeped shyly, as if hesitant about intruding upon the darkness of the night. With a sigh of contentment, I climbed lazily into my box and fell asleep. I dreamed, and all my longings came to the surface. That someone wanted me just for myself, just for companionship. My heart was full of love, love which had to be suppressed because no one at my home knew of a little girl cat's longings and desires. As an old woman cat, I am surrounded with love and I give my all in return. No hardship, now, and shortages. But to me this is the perfect life, where I am one with the family and loved as a real person. The night passed. Was restless and ill at ease, wondering about going home. Would it be hardship again? Would I have a bed of straw instead of old, damp newspapers? Thing I knew it was daylight. A dog was barking mournfully in the big room. I want out, I want out, he was saying, over and over, want out. Nearby a bird was telling off her mate for being late with the breakfast. The usual sounds of the day came to life. The bell in a church tower clanged as its brazen voice called the humans to do some sort of service. After mass I am going to the town to get a new blouse. Will you give me a lift? Asked a female voice. They passed from my hearing before I could catch the man's reply. The clattering of buckets reminded me that it would soon be time for breakfast. From the netted enclosure the handsome Tommy lifted up his voice in a song of praise to greet the new day. Man came with my breakfast. Hello, cat, she said. Have a good meal because you are going home this afternoon. And rubbed against her to show that I understood. She was wearing new, frilly under things, and she appeared to be in the best of spirits. Smile to myself when I think of how we cats see people. Often we can tell a person's mood by their underclothes. Our viewpoint is different. You see, fish was very good, but it was covered with some meal, or wheaty stuff, which I had to scrape off. Isn't it? Said a voice from the window. Good morning, Madam Butterball, I replied. Yes, this is very good, but what is this covering to it? Butterball laughed good-naturedly. She exclaimed, you must be a country girl. Here we always, but always, have cereals in the morning so that we get our vitamins. But why did I not have them before? I persisted. Because you were under treatment and had them in liquid form. I must go now, there is always so much to do, and so little time. We'll try to see you before you leave. Reply. She had jumped off the window, and I could hear her rustling through the bushes. Used babble of talk from the big room. Dog, so I says to him, I don't want you nosing around my lamp post. See, you will us snoops round to see what you can sniff out. Tong Fa, a Siamese cat who came in late in the evening, was talking to Chawa. Tell me, madame, are we not permitted to investigate the grounds here? I curled up and had a sleep. All this talk was making my head ache. Basket? I woke with a start and the woman entered my room by a side door. Basket? She does not need putting in a basket. I will have her on my lap. Good talking. That Tong Fa, mused the woman, it is a shame to put him to sleep. Can't we do something about it? The man shifted uncomfortably and rubbed his chin. What can we do? She's old and nearly blind. The owner has no time for him. There was silence for a long time. I don't like it, said the woman, it's murder. The man remained silent, I made myself as small as possible in a corner of the cage. Old and blind? Was that grounds for a death sentence? No thought for years of devotion and love. Kill the old ones off if they could not fend for themselves. Together the man and the woman walked into the big room and gently took old Dong Fa from his cage. The morning dragged on. Somber thoughts. To me, when I was old, Apple Tree had told me that I would have happiness. But when one is young and inexperienced, waiting seems an age without end. George's came in. Here is a little horse meat, small cat, eat it up because you are going home soon. Sensed him, and he stooped to stroke my head. Only had I finished eating, and doing my toilet, when the woman came for me. Here we go, Fifi, home to me. The old witch through the side door was waiting. And see us again soon. Many thanks for your hospitality. The woman walked on to where the man was waiting beside a big old car. She got in, made sure the windows were almost shut. Then the man got in and started the engine to the road leading to my home. Chapter 3. The car hummed along the highway. Tall poplar trees stood proudly at the side of the road, with frequent gaps in their ranks as testimony to the ravages of a great war, a war which I knew about only by listening to humans, seemingly endlessly. Vaguely I wondered how these machines worked. How did they run so fast and so long? It was but a vagrant thought. My attention was almost wholly held by the sights of the passing countryside. For the first mile or so I had sat upon the woman's lap. Curiosity got the better of me, and I walked somewhat unsteadily to the back of the car and sat on a shelf level with the rear window, a shelf where there was a Michelin guide, maps and other things. I could see the road behind us. Women moved up close to the man and they murmured sweet things together. I wondered if she also was going to have kittens. The sun was an hour across the sky as the man said, "We should be almost there." The woman, "I believe it is the big house a mile and a half beyond the church. Soon find it." Move on more slowly now, slowing to a stop as we turned into the drive and found the gates shut. Screet toot and a man came running out of the lodge and approached the car. Seeing and recognizing me, he turned and opened the gates. It gave me quite a thrill to realize that I had been instrumental in having the gates opened without there having to be any explanations given. We drove on, and the gatekeeper gravely acknowledged me as we passed. My life had been very narrow, I decided, for I had not even known of the lodge, or of the gates. It was at the side of one of the lawns. Talking to one of Pierre's helpers turned at our approach and walked slowly towards us. The man stopped the car, got out, and bowed politely to her. "You have brought your little cat, madame," he said, "and here is a certified copy of the stud Tom's pedigree." And wide when she saw me sitting in the car. "Did you not confine her in a box?" she asked. "No, madame," replied the man. "She is a good little cat and she has been quiet and well behaved all the time she was with us. We consider her to be an exceptionally well behaved cat." Felt myself blushing at such praise, and I confess that I was unmannerly enough to purr with complete agreement. Imperiously turned to the assistant gardener and said, "Run to the house, tell Madame Albertine I want her instantly." "Yeah," yelled the lodgekeeper's tomcat from behind a tree, "I know where you have been. Us working toms are not good enough for you. You have to have fancy boys," said the woman in the car. "There is a cat, Fifi must be kept from toms." It whirled, and threw a stick which she snatched from the ground. It missed the lodgekeeper's cat by feet. "Ha!" He ran off. "You couldn't hit a church steeple with a whisk's broom if you were 6 inches from it, you old woman." I blushed again. The language was terrible, and I felt a deep sense of relief as I saw Madame Albertine waddling down the drive at top speed, her face radiant with welcome. I held at her and jumped straight into her arms, telling her how much I loved her, how I had missed her, and all that had happened to me. At the time we were oblivious to everything except each other, then me. Rasping voice jerked us back to the present. "Did, are you aware that I am addressing you?" "Pay attention immediately," said the man who had driven me. "This cat has been neglected. She has not had enough to eat. Scraps are not good enough for pedigree Siamese cats, and they should have a warm, comfortable bed. This cat is valuable," he went on, "and would be a show cat if she were better looked after." Diplomat fixed him with a haughty glare. "This is just an animal, my man. I will pay your bill, but do not try to teach me my business. I am trying to save your valuable property," said the man, but she brushed him to silence as she read through the bill, clucking with displeasure at the items there. Opening her purse, she took out her checkbook and wrote something on a piece of paper before handing it to him. "Me," and stalked off. "We have to live through this every day," whispered Madame Albertine to the woman. They nodded in sympathy and drove slowly away. "Almost a week I had been away. Have happened during my absence.